Richard Russo's new novel, Chances Are, is out today. In it, three 66-year-old men convene on Martha's Vineyard one beautiful September afternoon. Friends ever since meeting in college circa the 60s, they couldn't have been more different then or even today. Lincoln's a commercial real estate broker, Teddy a tiny press publisher, and Mickey a musician beyond his rockin' age. But each man holds his own secrets, in addition to the monumental mystery that none of them has ever stopped puzzling over since a Memorial Day weekend on the vineyard in 1971. Richard Russo is the author of eight novels, most recently Everybody's Fool and That Old Cape Magic, two collections of stories in the memoir Elsewhere. In 2002, he received the Pulitzer Prize for Empire Falls. Russo will join me to discuss the new novel Chances Are on Wednesday, August 21st at 7 p.m. at the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College. Again, the name of the new novel out today is Chances Are, and it's a pleasure to welcome Rick Russo back to the roundtable. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Joe. Good to be here.
It's always nice. It is sort of a rite of passage when a new book comes out that you come around our way, and I so appreciate you doing that. It's very nice.
Well, it's always one of the high points. You know, this whole book publishing and book touring and all of that is everything about publishing. It seems very fluid. And so when you go someplace, you're almost always going to talk to somebody you've never seen before. But here we are.
After all these years
in our regular slots.
Well, I very much feels right to me. I hopefully it does to you as well. This novel is just beautiful. It's a lovely, lovely book, especially for this time of year. And I don't know exactly what I mean by that, but I guess just in the summer when you think of Martha's Vineyard, it just feels right.
Well, you know, my wife and family and I have been visiting that island sometimes in the summer, but more often in the fall. It's a magical place whenever, but in the fall, when all the politicos go home and all the frat boys go home and the island empties out a little, that's when its magic is really perfect. But we've been going, my mother took me there for the first time when I was like 10 or 11 years old. And this place, it speaks to me in some way that I'm investigating in this book.
One of the characters in this book actually says that there used to be a very defined season for the Cape, but now it tends to be getting longer and longer, that people sort of last a little bit longer. It doesn't necessarily shut down on Labor Day.
Yeah, they actually have a term for it now. It's a lot like what happens up in Maine as well. They call it shoulder season, and the idea, you know, everything used to close down at Labor Day, and then suddenly it extended to Columbus Day. I don't know. Is it global warming? Is it the weather is nicer? And now in much of Maine and on the Cape and the Vineyard and Nantucket, that season just continues on until Thanksgiving, at least, and sometimes through the holidays.
And you figure you're always at that point, basically, where it's too cold to swim, so I guess it doesn't much matter.
Yeah, well, September takes the water a while. This is why we always like to go there too. It takes the water a good month to really cool down. So
that's good.
You'll get some 75 degree days. And
so, what got you thinking about three 66-year-old men making their way to the Cape?
The book really originated with me because, for one thing, I was 66 when I started this book, the same age as these characters are, and I'm 69 now. And those of us who have reached that long in the tooth phase of our lives find ourselves looking backward as much as forward. And I have often thought about an evening in my own young manhood past when I was like these young guys slinging hash at a sorority house out west where I was at the University of Arizona on the night of the first Vietnam draft lottery. And I remember how profoundly that changed all of us. My friends and I, all of us who worked at the sorority at the time, it seemed like we were in this together. And of course, the Vietnam War was enormously unpopular on all college campuses. University of Arizona was a little bit farther away from, you know, the epicenter of that unrest. But going into the sorority house that afternoon, it seemed like I and my friends, and we were such good friends. It seemed like we were kind of all in the same boat. Vietnam was the sword of Damocles, it's swinging in a pendulum over us, and we all knew that there was the possibility that we were going to have to come to terms with it. But that night it changed because we got our draft numbers. So that's what I wanted to do was to take a look at three lives where one of them was going to have a single-digit draft number, which means he's going. And somebody is going to be on the cusp where his life, where he can no longer plan. He doesn't know if he's going or not to this senseless war on the other side of the world. But suddenly now he can't plan. And then there's somebody who's just given a reprieve. He gets a number in the 300s and he knows he's not going. And what I remember thinking of was that was the first time that I thought that all three of us, such good friends, realized that we had individual destinies, not a collective destiny. We weren't all talking about dreams that we were going to be able to fulfill. Somehow or other, we now had individual identities that had just been shaped. And I think it was a horrifying moment in that way for all of us, the ones who got the single digit numbers, and those who, like myself, who got a number in the 300s. Everything changed that day.
Then the idea to bring these characters 44 years later to look at their lives, the impact of that day and another event, which we'll talk about, to consider where they are. And I don't think I'm giving anything away, where there is some happiness, but there is still a lot of kind of feeling around to see exactly what they have at that point in their lives.
Well, one of the links of this novel to my last couple of books is that question that when you get past a certain age, an awful lot of people begin to look backwards and say, how in the world did I end up here?
Yeah.
You know, because there's the life you plan and then there's what happens to you. And very often those, suddenly you're on a different road than you imagined you were going to be on. And in this case, what these three guys have in common is that there has been some joy in their lives. There has been some things have worked out. But for the most part, not a single one of them, their lives have turned out the way they would have predicted.
Without getting overly psychological, where did you find yourself in that? I mean, you've had great success, but even you still, it's interesting to me that you would explore that of where people are.
Yeah, well, and the reason that I continue to obsess about destiny is that I'm so confused by my own. My sense is that when people get older, if they've been successful or if they've been unsuccessful, it doesn't matter, but especially if you've been successful in some way, and people ask you, how did this happen? The story that you tell is a story in which you say, I did this and it resulted in this, and I did that and it resulted in that, and I made a number of good decisions and success followed. So it becomes a story of all the good choices you made, right? And it tends to ignore what was done to you. Right. Any great fortune that came your way or anything that happened that prevented you from living the kind of life that you had, which is why people, many of them born on third base, believe that they have hit triples. Right.
Yes.
And it's an interesting time to talk about that, too.
Absolutely.
But my own sense is as I look back on my own life, my sense is that I'm enormously grateful for many things, one of which is that 300-something draft number that I got back in 1969 in that first Vietnam draft. But I'm grateful for an awful lot of other things, too, some of which are explored in this book. And my sense is that if I were to have the chance to do this another 99 times for an even 100,
yeah,
the way that it worked out this time would probably never happen again. Which is another way of saying that, yes, sometimes you make good decisions and you're rewarded for them. But other times you make good decisions and you're not rewarded for them. And sometimes actually foolishness, doing the absolute worst thing at the worst time, strangely enough, sometimes pays dividends. You know? And you wouldn't want to try to scale that. You wouldn't want to say what's the road to prosperity is built on what? Stupidity? No, of course it isn't. But every now and then, and it's not a mistake that two of my novels have the word fool in the title. I'm absolutely obsessed with and delighted by human foolishness that we all share. And the ways in which it can absolutely punish a life, and at other times be just the best of all possible things that could have happened to you.
Richard Russo is our guest. The new novel is Chances Are. Another way of asking the question, too, is do you feel a little bit of what is referred to as survivor's guilt in the sense that you're the lucky one?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This book is dedicated to those whose names are on the wall. So, yeah, I mean, every day of my life since 1969 has been predicated on chances. Right. Yeah. Chances are. And my chances were that day awfully good. And others, classmates of mine from high school and college, their chances were awfully bad. And so, sure. Yeah. These days when I look at my daughters, my grandchildren, and imagine that it doesn't take much of an imagination, really, to look at that and say there's a pretty good chance none of this was going to happen, but for the fact that my chances were awfully good on that one day when it was very important to be lucky. It was more important to be lucky than to be smart or gifted or any of those things. That day I was lucky, and so much has resulted from that.
The title of the book is Chances Are ... The ellipses is important for you.
I think so. Because it's ongoing, isn't it? I mean,
right.
you get to build if you're lucky at any given moment. You know, everything after that, you get to build on that luck. So it's not just you were lucky one day. It's after that you get to build everything that you build on that foundation of luck for that one day just increases your luck and your chances of being lucky in the future.
So let us go to these three men, Lincoln, Teddy, and Mickey. So they meet on the vineyard and they're all at different places. And so the first part of the novel is really giving us a sense, some of the backstory, but also a sense of where they are now. And something new to, at least in my reading of a Richard Russo novel, a bit of a mystery.
Yeah, I've come to think of it kind of almost as a suspense novel, except it functions like one structurally, mm-hmm. and there is a mystery.
Yes,
that absolutely delighted me because it does make for a page turner.
It does.
And so I loved all of that. But even as I was writing it, I was thinking, okay, this is a mystery, and it's going to function like a suspense novel, and people are going to read it in a slightly different way than they read my usual novels, which I would think of as kind of picaresques in a way. You have mm-hmm. a character that you follow who's doing kind of interesting things, but my other novels are very often, they could be titled The Adventures Of, right?
Right.
The Adventures of Donald Sullivan, The Adventures of Miles Roby, The
right.
Adventures Of, because they're like Don Quixote in a way. They're just he and Sancho are on the road, and you follow them, and they get into this fix and that fix, and this novel functions much more like a traditional thriller, where you sense tragedy and possible evil, pretty much on every page.
There's one line early in the novel where you tell us about the bomb about what happens on Memorial Day in 1971. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, and that's the point where you think, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to be different.
Yeah.
Also, and please correct me if you feel this is not correct, but the character of Lincoln is a quintessential Richard Russo character, isn't he?
I think in a way, all three of them are, in the sense that in this book, what I think of myself as having done some, you might be actually be able to correct me on this.
Okay.
On this, Joe. But what it seems to me is that I've done is that I've taken my own psyche. And instead of breaking it in two, as I did in Bridge of Sighs, which has two main male characters,
one
is the boy who never leaves his hometown, and the other is who gets away as soon as he can. That showed two aspects, two different impulses in my life at that time, one of which was to get as far away as I could, to run, to put distance between myself and whatever was chasing me. And the other was to never leave, to just stick where you are and make that good life, make the life as good as you can, right in the place that you are, create a safe space and never leave. And those are two aspects of my character that I've always kind of tried to reconcile my whole life. In this book, what I have, I think, is my own impulses, but this time split into three. And Lincoln is, I think, those dutiful, fairly emotionally conservative aspects of my life written large. Every time I've ever tried to do the right thing, tried to play it safe, tried to think of other people, and be diligent, do due diligence, and try to do the right thing. That's Lincoln. That's how he is. That's how he has lived his life, and it's been a pretty good life. Teddy seems to represent, I don't know, that part of my character that is a little bit more creative than that. He is the one who seems to understand that he has a story to tell, although he's having a devil of a time telling it. But he seems to represent that part of me that is, number one, very solitary and very secretive and very, well, I could probably let my voice drop right there. Mickey, the third character, he's the aging rocker.
Right.
And there's another version of my life where I've always known that there's another version of me out there playing rock and roll right now. he's far too old. He's become probably a parody of himself. But he straps that Fender guitar on and he plugs it into that amp, and his hearing is completely blown. but it's all he knows and all he loves.
I mentioned this about Lincoln of being quintessential, and I, just because there's a great line that you write of what saddened Lincoln most was the very real possibility that his mother had known from the start how all this would eventually play out. Hadn't she said as much, you can do things his way, meaning his father,
right?
You can do things his way, or you can wish you had.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not the first time I've used that line in fiction of mine. There are, and it's almost always in connection with fathers and sons, or mothers and daughters, but it's always said in the context of love.
Richard Russo's new novel is Chances Are. It is published by Knopf. Rick, it's always a great pleasure to have you before our microphones. I thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Joe.
Richard Russo will join me to discuss the new novel Chances Are on Wednesday, August 21st at 7 p.m. at the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College in an off-the-shelf event presented by Northshire Bookstore. Learn more at northshire.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.